తెలుసు సన్నాయి. Must be with your good wishes and blessings. The cough has subsided quite a bit. And that's the good news. Now you're waiting to hear what I'm about to say next. So that's the good news. The cough has gotten better, as you can see. And it only comes very rarely. So maybe once or twice it might happen, but other than that. Thanks to a lot of you, I know all of you would have passed on your goodwill and your blessings and would have, in whatever way, prayed for a speedy recovery, so thank you for that. But there were also those who were kind enough to offer some various kinds of gilampasa and medicine and herbs and whatnot. I've never felt so drugged in my life. I think I'm almost on the verge of rehabilitation now. So that's the good news. Yes. The bad news is, you see, when the Buddha laid down his rules of conduct, particularly to do with the time you take your meals for monks, bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, you are exempt from the rule if you are unwell. So, you had it fine to keep Swami Nuhansi past 12, with all your questions and your discussions and your mini meetings and all that, and I could take the liberty of going past scheduled finish time, because I was exempt temporarily during the time of my ailment, but I am no longer exempt from that. So that means I have to conclude around about 10:30, 10:45 to give you some time to come up and speak, but there are those who wish to do so, and I want to give you some time to do that as well. So that I can at least... the other alternative is we stop the Amstrong. That's also fine. So that's totally up to you. That's completely optional. Right? You wanted it. The plan for me was to go out on alms to the poor people. I don't see anyone poor here. So that plan got scuppered, thanks to you. So that was the plan. I was meant to finish here on time and then take my alms call and go around people who needed because they hadn't given. But the way that merits work is, it is those who have the merits who always get to do even more merits. It's always the way it is. No matter how much we try to change that, that's always the way it is. I remember the Venerable Kashyapa Thera. You may know these stories. He was sometimes found refusing offerings that were made by people who were well off, because he was quite adamant that it was the people the needy, people who didn't have much. And of course, back then there were plenty of Arhatan Mahanses. Yeah, so there were many who would go on alms round, and they were spoiled for choice people. If you wanted, you could offer to the Venerable Sariputta Thera. If you wanted, you could offer to the Mahamoggallana Thera. If you wanted, you could offer to the Ananda Thera, or even to the Buddha. People are spoiled for choice. But not so much now. Now to in fact find a Swami Nuhansi going on alms round is a pretty rare incident, isn't it? It is a pity in some ways, but I think it also is because monks nowadays are quite busy. They have lots of things that they have to get themselves involved in, because it is partly the lay community who expect the monks to engage in various activities and fulfill various obligations and duties and responsibilities. So, you know, you find monks in all social circles of life, well, virtually all social circles of life nowadays. So I think it's pretty difficult to find the time to go in an ashram. I suppose even in that time, they're probably doing some guidance, counseling, advice, whatever. But that's the upside. The flip side is people who don't get a chance or don't even feel the need to go up and speak to a monk or get some guidance, counseling, feel their loving tenderness, they just remain at home. And the only way to get them out of their homes and into the temples, so that they can actually engage themselves and embark themselves on this journey of spiritual development, is to initially start with giving something. That's how it all starts. The entire path to Nibbana starts with giving, ladies and gentlemen. There's a reason for that. It all starts with giving. Because suffering always starts with hoarding, thinking about oneself. To start giving in any way, even in the simplest ways, you have to think about the goodness of another person. Even if it is that you expect something in return for yourself, you're still giving up something, aren't you? That's where it has to start. And ultimately you end up giving, expecting nothing in return. But for that to happen at the end, at the beginning, you at least have to give something, expecting something in return. So that's the start. But very seldom do people find a chance to give, especially to the clergy these days, because people are far too busy doing their own things and paying the bills and doing the household chores. I mean, you have the liberty to come along every Sunday. Come on, every Sunday you get the opportunity to give alms. How many people have that opportunity? Every Sunday, that's once a week. When I was a layperson, I used to do that once a month. We used to go to the temple. There was a temple about 1.5 hours from where I used to live in Harrow. That was in Wellington, London. And so I used to go there, to Kingsbury Temple, which was my local temple. So it was the monks there who influenced me. It was the monks there who gave me some ideals and was someone for me to look up to. And I thought, one day I want to become like them. I looked at how kind and how generous they were and how selfless they were. To have left their homeland and to take themselves across, you know, over the oceans and to a foreign land and to bear the cold in the freezing winter, it gets terrible. And some of them are elderly, and you know, to do all that as service to humanity, it was really something for me to look up to. It inspired me. So partly the reason why I'm here today speaking to you. So I made it a point to go to visit the temple once a month, but that's the best I could do, because no monk came up to me. But now you have merits on legs. You can order a Pindapathika Bhikshan Mahansa. Once a week you get that. How lucky are you? So there's always a good side and a bad side to everything. The only problem I have with this ailment is that whenever I cough, that interrupts your samadhi. That's the only problem I have with that. So when you're focused on what I'm saying, and you're trying to contemplate on and trying to make sense of what I'm saying, and then, you know, this comes without warning, doesn't it? It's not like I know it's about to happen in 2 seconds, and I say, excuse me, switch off the microphone, and then cough. It doesn't work like that. I don't know when it's going to come, and then it just comes sometimes mid-sentence. And then you're trying to make sense of what I'm saying, and then your samadhi is interrupted. That interferes with your effort to understand the Dhamma. That is the only problem I have with this. Otherwise, I will cough till the cows come home. I don't care. Right. That's another thing I wanted to say. Ah, yes. I was meant to give you a date. Well, I have one now. The Dhamma is here to give you independence. Work it out. Okay, got it? Good. I've given you the date. You know what date it is? What? On the 4th of February. So it's going to be a Sunday. So we wanted to plan it so that you didn't have to take another day off. Now Sundays you've usually committed to this, to Rajakirya. So on the 4th of Sunday, we'll be organizing a day's program for you at the monastery. You can expect to arrive around 7:30, 8, that sort of time. I'll confirm the timings for you maybe in the following week. So Dasi Hans is being very kind. He says he wants to organize the whole event. I said, okay, fine, you can do it if you want to. And you can plan to stay there till around maybe 5 in the evening, give or take. I mean, you can leave if you have other engagements you have to attend. That's perfectly fine. But we'll plan for a day's event that starts in the morning and takes you till the evening. So we'll have Dhamma sermons, like we do this. We'll have meditation sessions. So I've got plans on how I can prepare you for that session. So we need to start thinking about what it is we are going to meditate on. Right? It's no good just to get you to sit down, legs folded, hands clasped together and start meditation. You need to know what you're going to be doing. We'll also have some small group discussions. These are all what I'm hoping to do. So a few of you can get into a group, and our Swami Mahanses as well as our Anagarika Mahatmyas, they will help us with that. Especially the ladies, I think it will be a fabulous opportunity for you to get to know our Anagarika Mahatmyas. And you'll realize that they're as good as us. They're no different. We are all about empowering. Because we empower minds, we don't empower men or women. There are no such things. We empower minds. All minds should be equally empowered. Equally empowered for what? Their own salvation as well as to support the salvation of others. That's what we are about. So we don't discriminate because there is nothing to discriminate with. We don't see men and women, we see minds. Conventionally, yes, there are men and women. So we adhere to the societal norms and as we are supposed to. But you will get a fantastic opportunity to speak with them that day and share with them any concerns you have, problems you have. If there are those who wish to take a one-on-one discussion, we will try and arrange that as well. It just depends on how many of you will want that. So they are versed in English, Sinhalese, and some in Hindi as well. So if you need a one-on-one session where perhaps you might want to get something off your chest, sometimes there are times like that. Because, you know, you can be assured that it's not going to come and bite you on the back. Right? That's the thing, right? Sometimes when you share a secret with someone, once it's shared, it's no longer a secret, is it? It's trust from there on. You can only have a secret with yourself. If you share it with someone, now it's trust, no longer a secret. But then someone who expects nothing from you, someone who expects no gain from you, no praise from you, no honor from you, no nothing from you. Now that is someone you can share a secret with. You can walk up to a tree and share a secret with it because it expects nothing from you. But no point, because they can't give you anything back in return. But that is why people trust the Swami Mahanses and the Anagarika Mahatmyas and so on. They're free to express themselves, get it off their chest. And those who have visited the monastery and have made use of this are living and breathing testimonies of what I speak of. So you can get that opportunity as well. Perhaps we'll put down a register of some sort next week, so you can put down your names if you wish to seek that service. Or if you we'll also get take an idea of numbers so we know how many group sessions we have to organize, as well as a suitable venue. I mean, it'll be at the monastery, but we have a few buildings where activities will be going on, and we'll try and find a suitable place so that you can all come in and engage with everything we have to offer comfortably. You will also be able to offer alms on the day. So all of that will be pre-arranged, pre-prepared. So all you got to do is come in and offer the alms. You can engage like you did when you came along for the Dakshina Yoga event. You can wash the alms bowls and do as many merits as you wish on that day. So it's almost like the monastery is yours for the day. We'll be visiting you, is what we'll be thinking as we come down for alms. So you will be hosting the day's events for us. All the Dhamma related events, the meditation, all that stuff, we'll be hosting for you. You got all that down? Okay, so 4th of February, please check with your loved ones, your relations, your neighbors, your whoever you need to check it with. Check the weather report, whatever you want to do, and see whether you can reserve the date in your diaries. And hopefully next week we'll have a register outside so you can put your names down and confirm your attendance. And we'll take it that way. If there are others who wish to join as well, it would be ideal if they have been listening to these talks, so they have some kind of a background, so they know what we're going to be doing. Whereas, if they're going to be first-timers, then we'll have to deal with it accordingly. So, let's see how it goes. Right, before we continue then, let us all take a moment to bring our palms together in veneration of the Supreme Enlightened One, the Perfect One, the Magnificent One, He who is unparalleled in virtue, in compassion and in loving kindness, and in all things that are good and great in this universe. He is our Father, He is our Guide, and He is our Master, and to His holy name we make this veneration. Let us also remind ourselves that this is a renewal of our pledge, our oath of allegiance, a pledge of allegiance that we take to fulfill our path to Nibbana by taking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and no other.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
What did we discuss last week? We discussed gender identity, whether you're male or female, and I was quite pleased to learn from, so we have a team at the monastery who moderate social media activities and respond to emails and whatnot that we receive from devotees and so on. I was quite pleased to learn that there was a person who written in, saying that they were a trans woman. And they had found such solace listening to the talk, because they'd always found it very difficult to try and place themselves and identify what their gender was. They've always felt that their brain and body were not congruent. They didn't agree. They always disagreed. So a mind that feels it is male but sees the body as female, or a mind that thinks it's female and sees the body as male, now it has a problem, doesn't it? You see, the only reason you don't have a problem is, yes, the only reason you don't have a problem with your construct is because your mind and body agree. That's why. If you think you're male and your body is also male, it conforms with your thinking, now you feel you're fine, you feel you're normal. But if one fine day you wake up and you begin to think that you're female, so when you went to bed you were male, you had the parts of a male body, and you wake up and you realize that you are still male but you begin to feel you're female, which is entirely possible, because remember, we profile ourselves in every chitta. Every chitta has to work to remind you who you are. So in every chitta, you are reminded that you are man or woman. What if the next chitta gets it? You can't say get it wrong, gets it wrong. What is right from wrong? How do you say it's wrong? So what is right then? It's just the way it is, that's all. What is right and what is wrong? I don't mean in a conventional sense. In a conventional sense, there are plenty of right things and wrong things. If you do the right thing, you get congratulated. If you get the wrong thing, if you do the wrong thing, you get incarcerated. But in an absolute sense, what is right and wrong? There are just causes and effects. That's it. So the only reason that you feel you're normal is because you think you're a man and you look at yourself in the mirror and you see man parts. Or you think you're a woman and you look at yourself in the mirror and you see a woman's body. So you feel you're normal. That's the only reason you feel normal. That's why I say, you know, the next chitta arises and all of a sudden if you were to feel that you were the opposite gender, now what do you do? Now you think this is entirely impossible, but there are people who go through this. There are people for whom this is the experience right from birth. From a time where they begin to sense themselves and begin to identify with themselves and their bodies and get to know themselves. There are people who have this problem. To them it's a problem and they believe the problem is here with the body. So I know people who've gone through surgical transformations, changes, physical changes in their bodies to try and make their bodies congruent with their thinking patterns. They have a gender in the mind, but the body does not agree with that. So now they have to reconcile those differences. That's intensive, isn't it? As well as invasive. But if you let me have a go at them, in other words, let the Dhamma have a go at them. It doesn't have to be intensive, doesn't have to be invasive. All you need is to speak to the mind and share the truth. So I was very pleased, perhaps. So we normally, before we read out comments, as a matter of courtesy, we always go back to the people who make those comments and ask them, is it okay, are you happy for us to share some of your thoughts in public? So we're going back to ask them if they're happy to share some of those thoughts with you, and then if they're happy, we can come back and I can read it out to you. So you can see what a difference the Dhamma is making to people. People who thought that they were cursed for life. I mean, just think about it. If people have the means, they can go and get this done, right? But that is not the answer. You can get it done for how long? What's going to happen in your next birth? All of these are only temporary fixes. But if you can teach someone the Dhamma and help them understand that they are neither man nor woman, they will never be born again either, as either. Either man or woman. And then, no problems at all. So who are you, I ask you? Are you a man or are you a woman? Do you take pride in the fact that you are a man or that you are a woman? These are just rhetorical questions. I just want you to think of the answers in your own heads. Are you happy about how beautiful you are? How pretty you look? What is it you take pride in? Or are you happy about how handsome you are? The fact that you've been to the gym lately, worked yourself out, and gotten a bit muscular. When you flex your muscles and you look at yourself, how does that make you feel? Do you feel manly? I'm just asking. I don't need you to tell me yes, give me yeses or noes. I'm just asking. When you do your makeup, when you do your hair up, etc., 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 and then you look at yourself, do you feel very womanly? Hey, I'm talking to your chitta. Hello? Wake up. Which part about you defines your gender? You are a chitta. I speak to the chitta. This is just baggage that you have to carry around with you. You got no choice about that. Somewhere down the line, your chitta, in your previous incarnation, at the moment of your passing away, that chitta engaged in a deed. A karma was done. And that karma determined whether matter that was going to be attracted towards that chitta was going to take the form of male or woman or female. So male and female are just templates, if you like. They're just templates. Excuse me. It's a template. See, you take mass, you take muscle, you take bone, you take blood, you take tissue, and you throw it at this template. If the template is that of a man, it's going to stick and take the shape of a man. If the template is that of a woman, it's going to take the shape of a woman. After all, we all eat the same stuff. We've heard this from me time and time again. We all eat the same stuff. But that stuff, it goes into your bodies and it goes and slots in the relevant parts of your body, and there's a template around which it fits. That template is your DNA. A couple of weeks ago only, we discussed how DNA is formed. And where all that comes from, and how the DNA is responsible for the structure that you carry around with you. Is that man or woman? That's just mass and energy. Matter and energy. All determined by your thinking. So you see, here's the best way to not... If you're a woman in this birth and you think, you know, in my next birth I want to be a man. The only thing you got to do... I'm not suggesting you do this. I'm not recommending you do this because you should be neither man nor woman. Okay? But I know there are some who wish, oh, how I wish I were a man. If you do. And then maybe there are others who wish, how I wish I were a woman. All you got to do is think like one. If you want to be born a man, have manly thoughts. If you want to be born a woman, have womanly thoughts. Feminine thoughts. And continue to practice that. You know, there was a time back in the Buddha's era, or when the Buddha was around, there was an ascetic, and he used to engage, because there were various practices that they used to observe. You know, like the Buddha would advise and get his monks and his bhikkhus and bhikkhunis to observe the Noble Eightfold Path to salvation. There were those who would practice their own practices. That is what is referred to in the Silabbatha Paramasa. Various practices that were adhered to in the name of salvation, nothing else. So for instance, some people used to starve themselves. They used to starve for days, weeks, months on. For what? In the name of salvation. Even to this day, you see some of these practices going on around the world. People starve themselves in the name of salvation. That one day they will find bliss. Then there were those who used to stand on one foot. Not for a few minutes, sometimes for days on end. Just imagine how excruciating the pain must have been. But they endured that. Because they had their eyes on the prize. Ultimate salvation is what they wanted, but they were not going to get anywhere close to it because there's only one path. Ekayanam bhikkhave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. The Buddha thinks, so the Buddha says, because the Buddha knows that if there is only one path to purification, and that is the Satara Satipatthana. Contemplation on anicca, dukkha and anatta in four ways. That is what the Satara Satipatthana is. Anicca, dukkha and anatta is your contemplation, but in four, you take four approaches. Kaya anupassana, chitta anupassana, dhamma anupassana and vedana anupassana. But the essence of it is anicca dukkha anatta, which is what we've been discussing. So, without you even knowing it, ladies and gentlemen, what you're really doing is, as we do this talk, as you contemplate on it, is the Satara Satipatthana. But when did you sit cross-legged for that? You don't need to. So what will you be doing when you come to the meditation program at the monastery? Good question, Swami. What are you going to get us to? Environment is everything. That is what. Environment is everything. You have the potential. We just need to find the environment. You are the seed. You carry the seed with you. We need to find the fertile ground. Plant it. Add some water, add some fertilizer, and voila, you have magic. So, when you are at the monastery, you can sit down, you can walk. Even as you speak, when you are having your discussions, you will still be meditating, because our definition of meditation is samadhi. Samadhi is meditation. Samadhi is meditation. In fact, our program is called Samma Samadhi. If you take a moment to understand the meaning of the word samadhi, the actual meaning of the word samadhi, it means to keep the mind in parallel with the Dhamma. That is what samadhi means. That is all samadhi means. It has no reference to how straight your back ought to be, or whether your head has to be up straight or stooping down below. No reference to that. If you learn this kind of meditation, folks, even the day you are paralyzed, you can still do your meditation. You know, there are some devas who have no form, right? They have no form. So how on earth are they going to attain Nibbana if they have to keep their back straight? What back do they have? And the Brahmas, they don't breathe because they don't have lungs like you and I do. So if anapana is all about breathing in and breathing out, how on earth are they going to attain Nibbana? They don't breathe. At least in that way, these meditation practices have carried on through the ages, and we are eternally grateful for that. At least people understand when we say anapana, something to do with practice, something to do with Buddhism, something to do with meditation. And for that we are grateful. But on your path to Nibbana, you need to understand the more profound meanings behind these things. Because otherwise one day you're going to get a respiratory infection or something. And then no more anapana until you're better. You get a backache, you can't sit up straight. No more anapana. Because in the Anapana Sutta it says, Ujjunkayam panidaya parimukhan sati upattapetva. Now, most people believe that Ujjunkayam is to keep the body straight, upright. These are the superficial meanings. And we are not here to deny them. So be it. But what I am saying is, I don't see how that can lead one to Nibbana. Your body has got nothing to do with Nibbana. It is supportive to the mind, of course. If you are hungry, you can't keep your practice, because your mind will always keep shifting and drifting to your hunger. So therefore, the four requisites are important. That is why the Buddha laid down ways in which we can take the four requisites. Right? So that is all important. You need to be well. You should not be hungry. You should have a roof above your head. You need something to wear around your body so that you are not affected by the elements. All of that is fair game. But why one has to keep their back straight? That is questionable. Would you rather me teach you how to attain Nibbana only when you are fit physically, or would you rather me teach you how to attain Nibbana no matter what your physical state is? What would you rather have me do? You tell me, then I'll teach you. Because if you are past 60 or past, you know, getting on to 70 and whatnot, your Nibbana is going to end in another few years' time. Because you will not be able to sit up straight. Here's another example to prove my point. The Buddha preached the Dhamma to his father, King Suddhodana, on his bed. So he was lying down on his bed. Where was he sat down with his back straight? As he was preaching the Dhamma, King Suddhodana, he attained the state of arahathood. Leave Suddhodana to a side. The great elder Sariputta, who is the chief disciple of the Buddha, he attained the state of arahathood while he was fanning the Buddha, as the Buddha was delivering a sermon to his cousin. The Buddha was delivering a sermon to a relation of the Venerable Sariputta's. And the Venerable Sariputta, in respect and regard for his teacher, his great master, he was fanning the Buddha. No cross-legged. So how can you do this and attain Nibbana? If you have to be like this for that. If you have to be sat with your back straight. If you have to keep your focus on your breath as it touches your lips, as it passes up and down. What was Venerable Sariputta Thero doing? Once again, I'm not here to deny the practices, the ways in which people practice meditation. It is, if that is how it works for them, that's how it works for them. I'm not the Buddha to deny anything. Because to be able to do so, I have to be the infinitely wise one. I have to be the omniscient one. And I'm not. But here's what my little brain tells me. Nibbana is an affair of the mind. How the body is can have no connection to that. If so, the arupavachara, beings in the Brahma worlds, the rupavachara Brahma worlds, where they have no physical bodies like you and I do, they have very subtle bodies. It's almost like a body of light. That's how their bodies are. So how do they attain Nibbana? They don't need any breath. They don't need to breathe. Do you think they have oxygen up there? Anyhow, put all that to aside for a second. My point is, I'm here to try and help you attain Nibbana no matter what the circumstances are. Would you rather that or not? Come rain or shine. Whether you're young or old, whether you're man, sorry, I correct myself, whether you think you're man or you think you're woman, it matters not, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a mind that can aspire to virtue, a mind that can aspire to samadhi, sila and prajna, you can attain Nibbana, full stop. Don't let anyone say anything else. Don't let anyone say otherwise. So you don't have to wait till the Maitri Buddha comes along to attain Nibbana. Because the Maitri Buddha is going to say the same things as our Buddha did. If the Dhamma makes sense to you, if as you listen to the Dhamma, attachment starts to disappear in your mind, then the Maitri Buddha is going to do exactly the same. He's not going to come up with a new way to attain Nibbana. He's going to deliver the same teaching that the Gautama Buddha did. No different. Because if there's only one path to Nibbana, Ekaino ambikkave maggo, sattana visuddhya, soka pariddhavana samatikkamaya, dukkha domanasana attangamaya. Right? If there's only one path to that, how can the Maitri Buddha come and teach another path? So, don't postpone Nibbana. Don't belittle yourselves. Don't undermine yourselves. Don't think you don't have enough merits for that. Don't think you are too old for that. Don't think you are too late for that. You are not. If I have such assurance about your capability to attain Nibbana, then please don't put off Nibbana, because that's the worst thing you can do for yourselves. And if anyone says so, walk a mile. Turn around and walk a mile. If anyone tells you, you're too old for Nibbana, thank you very much for your opinion. But your opinion of me does not have to be my reality. Walk away. Walk away. Why should anyone tell you how great you can be? Huh? You can be as great as you want to be. Because we have a path for that. There is no doer here, just the done. You know, it matters not who you know. All that matters is what you know. Unlike the world outside. Because out there, it matters not what you know, right? To get something done, what matters is who you know. It's not like that with Nibbana. Because it is not subjective. It's purely objective. Whether you're a king or an emperor or you're just a servant or just a peasant, it matters not. Matters not. If you want this, you can have it. Simple as that. But you have to want it. You have to want it from the bottom of your heart. You have to want it like nothing else. You have to want it like it's going out of fashion. You have to want it like there's no tomorrow. That much you have to want it. If you want it that much, you will have it before tomorrow. You will. Remember the story of the great monk who wanted to attain Nibbana. But when he was a layperson, he was in a marriage and his wife started seeing some other men, and he realized that this life is no good. He gave up his worldly life and then he went forth, became a monk, isolated himself in a forest, and he started practicing. The wife that used to be, she was worried that this man would one day come back and cause harm to her. I'm just cutting down a long story. And then what she did was she sent a bunch of robbers, mugglers, murderers in fact, and said, go and be off with him. So they went up to him. He'd been practicing diligently, but he needed a little bit more time before he could attain the state of arahathood. So when the murderers approached him, when these thieves approached him, he said, if you have come to take my life, then so be it. But please give me another day. I need till tomorrow morning before I am done with what I have to do. And these men, the murderers, they said, how do we trust you? What you're asking for is reasonable, but we've come here tasked to kill you. How can we trust you? And he said, I'm a Buddha Putra, I don't lie. Can't you take my word for it? They said, well, it is true, but we are here on a mission. So until we know that you are dead, we can't be gone. So then he said, what? Get me that rock over there. If you can't take my word. These are true stories, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, you need to need Nibbana like nothing else. Give me that rock over there, he said. And so when he was handed over this rock, he sat down and he smashed the rock on his knees. And his knees cracked. And he said, are you now convinced that I will not be leaving this place? Be back by tomorrow and take what you want to take from me. Give me till the morning. He went on to practice. He further contemplated on how miserable this world is. How people, when they're delusioned, they are willing to take another person's life. When they mean no harm. When they mean no threat. And he contemplated on the Buddha's words that there is nothing that is of value to be had. Not even this life is of any value. And upon that realization, he became an arahant. The following morning, when the murderers came, the monk was dead. He'd gone into parinibbana. You need to want it like nothing else. That's all it is. So how do you want it so much? How do you get to a point where you want nibbana so badly? Because it is one of the factors that are essential to one's attaining Nibbana. Chanda, Chitta, Virya, Vimansa. These are four of the faculties that are essential for one's practice. Chanda is your desire to attain Nibbana. It is essential, ladies and gentlemen. There are two types of desire. One is desire for the sensual world. It's where you have come from. Where we all come from. That's one kind of desire. Then there's the desire for Nibbana. Don't ever lose that. That will be lost in due course. You don't need to do anything about that. Once you have become an arahant, that will be lost. What will be lost? The desire to attain Nibbana, because you are now at Nibbana. You no longer need that. Chitta is how diligently you tame your mind and you focus your thoughts on your practice. Virya is your effort. How much you are willing to put into this. Vimansa is how insightfully you practice. If you have these four things, you're well and truly on the path to your salvation. So chanda, it is absolutely essential, your desire to attain Nibbana. When you think of Nibbana, I need you to understand it correctly, accurately and precisely. Because some of you will have preconceptions of what Nibbana is. Because you will have heard lots of stories about Nibbana. Some might think that it's a state somewhere where you go to once you're dead. Others might think it's a transformation that happens within you, and there's a physical transformation. And sometimes, you know, it might feel like it's a state of mind where you just go cuckoo. Some might say the Nibbana is a state of mind where you just go a little bit crazy. I just want you to understand what you mean, what we mean by Nibbana, before we actually start making progress towards that. But I think most of you have a good idea of what Nibbana is. Here's what Nibbana is in very simple words. No matter what goes on around you, you're okay. Simple. Is that so right now? Can you say that about yourself right now? No matter what goes on around me, I'm okay. Can you? There you go. So you need Nibbana, don't you? Wouldn't you rather be like that? No matter what goes on around me, I'm okay. Mentally, I'm okay. Physically, I'll do what I need to do. Yes. I'll do what the situation demands of me. Yes. I'll always check either side of the road before I cross the street. Yes. But I'm okay. Mentally, I'm okay. Nibbana is a state of mind where you're okay with everything. Everything and anything. And it's possible. That's the best news. It's possible. It's doable. Take it from someone who's trying to do it and who's experiencing the taste of it. It's doable. I know it is. I couldn't spend a day without watching my TV. Look at where I am now. I couldn't spend a weekend without watching a film. I couldn't. Look at where I am now. Nibbana works. The Dhamma works. I couldn't imagine spending my life without a woman. Look at where I am now. I couldn't imagine spending my life without knowing I had property to my name. So I could say, this is mine, that is mine, that is also mine, that will be mine. This used to be mine. And then I sold that off to buy a bigger one. I used to take great pride in that. The things that used to make me happy. When I used to meet my colleagues, meet friends from school, used to ask, what are you doing? How's life treating you? I mean, of course you ask that question because you have something to say, right? Shame on us. How's life treating you? I mean, you know, you never find a beggar coming up to you and ask, how's life treating you? You don't get that. When you feel like you have something to say, you know, you've got to wait for them to ask the question, right? Otherwise it's like showing off. So you ask the question, how's life treating you? I say, so, how are you? Ah, thank you, let me now speak. Those days are gone. You know, I have now come upon days where I question whether I'm even a man. Gone are those days where I used to think I was rich. Gone are those days where I used to think I was a husband to a wife. Those days are gone where I used to think I'm a son to a mother and a father. I'm not. The Dhamma works. But to this day, I'll fulfill my duties. I still speak to my parents. And I help them practice the path. Walk towards the Dhamma. Walk towards Nibbana. Duties and responsibilities will forever be with me. Because that is something I know. I have a duty. I have a responsibility. I have a responsibility towards my students. But if one of them would leave me, okay. And then the following day, they come back. Okay. And then again, the next day they leave me and they tell us, you were a cheat. You ruined my life. So this is what my student tells me. If they did on the day they leave me. You ruined my life. You wasted my life. All your teachings were to no avail. I haven't learned anything from you. You just wasted my years. And spits in my face as they turn around and walk away. I say, thank you. Thank you for the gift. But may you be well and may you find the path that takes you to bliss. I am not just saying these things because a monk doesn't lie. The Dhamma works, folks. The Dhamma works. What are you doing? The Dhamma works. I'm telling you, there was a time where I couldn't imagine a day without a woman beside me, by my side. I couldn't imagine a day like that. I couldn't imagine a day where I had to spend without my phone in my hand, without the TV, without the internet. I couldn't imagine a day like that. I loved my food, I loved my music, I loved my TV, I loved my films, I loved going around, taking walks, seeing the world, traveling. We used to plan for short breaks every three or four months. We'd save up the holiday so that we could take longer breaks and go see the waterfalls, go see the beaches, go on safaris, go sightseeing, go bird watching, and do all sorts. Go kayaking, go canoeing, go climbing. Look at me. Look at me now. My only adventure is on a Sunday morning coming to Rajagir here. This is as exciting as it gets for me now. But I'm okay. I'm telling you, there's a way. There's a way to be happy no matter what goes on around you. Come taste that bliss of freedom. Because you cannot ever be in total control of what goes on around you, can you? You don't know the next time you're going to faint and the doctor's going to say there's a clot in one of your arteries and now you're going to be, half of your body's going to be paralyzed. You know, when that day comes, what are you going to do, I ask you? Now you just become dead weight. You just become a burden to the rest of your family. Right? So now, although they don't tell you, they are in the back of their minds, they're planning, how do we still go on that trip and leave this bugger at home? But they don't tell it to your face because, you know, for fear that they might hurt you. Yes, they love you, absolutely, no question. They love you, yes. But still, they have rashes that need itching. They have rashes that need itching. They still want to travel. They still want to climb Sigiriya. And if you can't go up that place, then they have to leave you behind. But they can't come up to you and say, do you mind if we go and you stay? Is that okay? Because what are you going to do with them? They don't want to hurt your feelings because they know that your feelings can still be hurt. That's when you become a burden. You know, if you don't want to be a burden to your children, leave them an assurance that you cannot be hurt. There's a challenge for parents. There you go. Give them an assurance that you cannot be hurt. Then when you're older, when you're frail, when you're weak, when you can't be mobile anymore, they can go traveling, sightseeing, go to the beach, go play, whatever. Go to the restaurants with their families and they don't have to worry about you. But now they do. Because they don't know how to break it to you. In a way that doesn't hurt your feelings. Therefore you become a burden to them. I mean, I've heard parents, they say, you know, I never want to be a burden to my children. Well, unless you practice the Dhamma, you will always be. And then of course you have the in-law problems. Again, because of ignorance and attachment. Right? Your son, now he is on the horns of a dilemma. His wife wants one thing, but you want another. You're the mother. Do you know how many sons get caught up in this problem throughout the world? Now give me a virtual show of hands. Just a virtual one. Especially if you're here with your wife or your mother. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Because of course, you know, it's a young couple, so the son has to do now what he has to do to keep the wife happy, because that was what was promised. But now he's torn between doing what is right for his wife and doing what is right for his mother, because he can't hurt his mother's feelings. That is because his mother's feelings can still be hurt. Right? What if his mother was an arahant? Now does he have to concern himself about hurting his mother's feelings? No. Not anymore. I mean, arahant is a long stretch. Right? Even if the mother has understood the Dhamma, and the mother can walk up to the child and say, Putta, you know what? Let me have a heart on heart to you. This is the honest truth. Right? And please bear this in mind whenever you find yourself in this situation where you have to choose wife or me. Never feel that you have to make that choice based on whether my feelings are going to be hurt. Because I tell you this, I am now a disciple of the Buddha. You cannot hurt my feelings anymore. Wow. Kya baat hai. Come on. Do that. Let them off, cut them some slack. Relieve them. Let them be free. You have no idea what a gift that is to your children. Because if you've been there, you know what this feels like. When you're between a rock and a hard place, you know what it feels like if you've been there. Because on the one hand, you have the mother's love that is like the deep blue sea. And then you have your wife on the other hand, that is like the devil. Right? So when you are stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea, it's a dilemma. It certainly is. Because of course you are grateful to your mother, but on the other hand you have to live with this woman for the rest of your life. I mean, I speak about men and towards women, but the other way it works the same. No difference. So I'm not having a go at wives or anything. I'm just saying, you know, I give you one, you think, you substitute that with whatever. So the point is, ladies and gentlemen, you know, there is a way. There is a way to freedom. I'm saying invest as much of your life as you possibly can to achieve that freedom, because this is the only thing that lasts. You cook today, you eat today, right? You defecate. Tomorrow you cook, you eat, you defecate. The following day you eat, you cook, you defecate. And you keep on doing, you keep on doing, you keep on doing. On the last day of your life, you cook, you eat, you defecate, if you are still alive by that time. Otherwise, they do it for the post-mortem. Then, you are dead, and you are born again, and then you do what again? Same thing over again. What's left? All of this is just unfinished business. No end to any of this. Education is good because we need it to survive, but that's it. You know, Einstein died, he was born again. What do you think? He knew E=mc² when he was born again? No, he is going to have to discover it all again. In fact, he's going to learn it from somebody else now. Not knowing all the while that it was he who discovered it. Just think about the irony of that. Huh? To think that Thomas Alva Edison is going to have to learn how to switch on the light bulb. To think that Mr. Bell's mother is going to have to teach him how to use the phone. He's the man who discovered it. But what was the point? Yes, the human race has benefited from it. Yes, humankind, mankind, we've all benefited from it. It has made life easier for us. But for them, they earned some merits, of course, if they did it out of the goodness of their hearts, so that all people could benefit out of it and make communication easier, so that, you know, health and people's life and, you know, the quality of their lives could be improved. Absolutely, merits have been earned. But that's it. Life goes on. So I want you to aspire to Nibbana. For the time being, I don't want you to think of a Nibbana where there is no life after birth. Just put that to a side. Because here's the thing. Until you understand what Nibbana is, that'll fear you. That'll scare you. The prospect of not being born again. Until you have grasped the actual concept of Nibbana, the prospect of not being born again seems like a threat. So your mind will try to ignore that. Your mind will not liken to it. It won't. So, until you have actually grasped the concept of Nibbana, let's say until you have become a Sotapanna, now don't come asking me, am I one? I don't have a certificate to give you. You will know it when it happens. You may not know it as you have become a Sotapanna, but you will know this. There is nothing I am willing to exchange in return for Nibbana. Nothing. Nibbana, Nibbana, that's it. I don't want to exchange this for anything else. I am willing to give up anything for Nibbana. That is where you will be. Because Nibbana becomes the purpose of your life. Remember how education used to be the purpose of your life? Remember how becoming a doctor used to be the purpose of your life? Remember getting married was once the purpose of your life? You know, for that duration of time, there was a time in your life, it could have been days, months, weeks, years. Right? That becomes the purpose of it. That's all you think about, that's all you talk about, that's all you do. All your actions, thoughts and speech are all focused on that. That becomes the purpose of your existence. There's going to be a day, ladies and gentlemen, where Nibbana becomes the focus of your existence. Has that day dawned upon you, I ask you? If not, then keep on striving for that. That will happen. Let it happen when it happens. It has happened for us. The purpose of our lives has become Nibbana. I don't want anything else. If I have to give up anything in the name of Nibbana, I'm willing to do that. If the Buddha came up to me and said, if you are happy to give your life up right now, I will give you the assurance that you will have become an arahant. Are you prepared for that? I'll say, you should have asked me earlier. Shouldn't have. You should have asked me sooner. Why wait till this long? That day will happen for you. Just understand Nibbana as a state of mind where you are okay no matter what. And aspire to that. Because you know that hasn't happened for you yet. Because right now, you still need the things around you to keep you happy. How do you know you still need the things around you to keep you happy? How do you know this? Are you willing to come with me to the monastery today? And then live a celibate life and give up everything? I promise you Nibbana. I promise you that. You will attain Nibbana, but you'll have to focus on a path and you'll have to do what I ask you to do. None of this is going to hurt you. These are all only the good things, right? And every step you take is only going to help you achieve more and more joy in your life. If you're willing to do that, you're going to have to leave behind your house, your property, your wealth, your whatever, all the things you've spent half of your life acquiring and accumulating. You're going to have to leave these things behind. You're going to leave your car behind. You're going to have to leave your watch behind. You're going to have to leave your computer behind. You're going to have to leave your phone behind. You're going to have to leave your garden behind. You're going to have to leave your kittens behind. Now, for some people, it is that. You think that's funny? No, of course not. It's horses for courses. You don't know what people are attached to. Different people are attached to different things. Are you willing to leave your children behind? Oh, let's not get there, Swami. Now you're walking on, you know, forbidden territory. Let me give you the assurance that your children will be fine without you. Now are you willing to leave them behind? They're going to be happy without you. In fact, they'll come and say, Tata, you go. I'm all right. Ammi, you go. I'm fine. We look after ourselves, right? You've earned us enough money. We've got enough property, right? We have a roof above our heads. We've got enough money to feed ourselves 3 square meals every day. Right? We'll be fine. Just don't worry about us. You carry on. This is all we want for you. You go attend your Nibbana and be happy. So you're getting an early retirement. Are you willing? Or are you going to turn around and say, how dare you say like that? Are you willing? Or do you still have some ifs and some buts? I'll go to Nibbana, but can I take my husband with me? I'm going to come with you, Swami Nuhansa, if you let me take my puppies with me. You know, when you're aspiring to unconditional happiness, you can't have conditions. It doesn't make sense, does it? It doesn't add up. I want to be unconditionally happy, provided... What? Did you hear me say that? I want to be unconditionally happy... Provided. What do you mean provided? That's it. I want to be unconditionally happy. You can't say provided. We provide nothing and be unconditionally happy. That is what Nibbana helps you do. I'm saying, you know, even if you're not there yet, aspire to that. It's a fantastic state of mind to be. It is the place to be, ladies and gentlemen. It's the place to visit this year, I tell you. You know, they have the restaurants you have to eat at before you die. They have these lists, don't they? Places you have to visit before you die. Huh? People you have to meet before you die. The foods that you have to try before you die. You've heard of that, haven't you? There are places like that. Beaches you have to visit before you die. The cars that you have to drive before you die. And the watches that you have to wear, and the phones that you have before you die, and so on and so forth. So some of you will have lists this year, 2024. Which ones are you going to tick? Which ones do you have in your bucket list for this year? Which of those places are you going to be traveling to? Which of those restaurants do you want to go eat at? What are those experiences that you want to go and have? When is Nibbana going to feature in that, I ask you? This is the destination that you have to experience before you die. Nibbana. Nibbana is simply this. You're okay no matter what. Someone asks you what is Nibbana, don't go talking all spiritual stuff. Don't go talking about it's the afterbirth, the afterlife, not death and all that. They get, oh no, no, I don't want that. Tell me something I can understand. Especially don't tell them about stuff about, you know, You're dead and you're not born again. That shocks them. No, it does. Don't give them that. Especially as a first dose, don't give them that. No life after death, it's a shocker. You're talking to someone whose religion is existence. You're speaking to someone whose religion is existence. They live to eat, to see, to smell, to taste, to experience, to be with others, to go places. That is the purpose of their existence. And you're going to tell them, when you're dead, you're not going to be born again? I mean, they're just living hopeful that even when this is done, they'll have another chance. So don't start with that. So, you know, I suppose in this year you've got plans to bring two more people onto the path of the Dhamma. I encourage you to do that. Every year, keep that as a personal target. I'm going to introduce two individuals to the Dhamma. Just two. Two individuals. The Buddha had two chief disciples, right? You can introduce two disciples of your own to the Sasana. Just two, that's enough. It could be a relation of yours, could be a sibling, could be your mother, could be your father, could be a best friend, could be a colleague at work. Could be someone you bump into on the street. And you say, I'm really sorry. It was their mistake and you said sorry. And they turn around and ask you, I've never ever met someone who, when I bump into them, they turn around and say, sorry, what is your philosophy? What's wrong with you? They'll ask you. And then you can tell them, I'm just glad to be born human. I bumped into another human being. If I can give you a sorry, if I can say a word and put a smile on my face and it brightens up your day, sir, you've given me the opportunity to do that by bumping into me. So, thank you. And they'll be like, what? Never heard that stuff before. Where did you learn that stuff from? One, you back them. Little things go a long way. I always keep telling you, it is not me who bring the people here and keep them here. That's your doing. Little things go a long way, ladies and gentlemen. Don't ever underestimate that. The power of a smile, never underestimate that. The power of a thank you, phenomenal. Never underestimate the power of a thank you. The power of an excuse me. Do you mind? Could you please? These are the T's and the Q's that our teachers and our parents taught us, and they are so valuable. Especially if it's done from the bottom of your heart. See, now, all your courtesies I encourage you to do with compassion. Not because it has to be done. Like sometimes you say good morning, like you don't mean it, like morning. Have you not heard that? People greet each other, morning. Morning, morning. You know, whenever you greet someone, do it with all your heart. Earn some merits out of it. Come on. That's a lost opportunity otherwise. Earn some merits out of it. From the bottom of your heart, wishing that they'll have a good day and joy in their heart so that that joy can take them to Nibbana. You know, I've told you this before. You are now the right kind of people to be messing with. Aren't you? You know, heard people say this thing? Hey, don't mess with me. You're messing with the wrong guy. Have you not heard people say that? Who did you hear say that? Huh? Me, myself, and I. I like to propose that you are now the right kind of people to be messing with. Don't agree? You are now the right kind of people to be messing with. Because if someone bumps into you, only goodness can happen in their lives. Because you might feel a bit angry, might feel a bit frustrated, annoyed, agitated, but you know, oh, whoa, whoa, hold on, I've got that pirithnol on my hand. I have to face up to Swami Mahasaya on Sunday. And then he's going to look at our faces and tell us how good we are. And then I'm going to have to look down in embarrassment because I've not been good. You know, that's partly the reason why I praise you so much. To guilt trap you. I want these words to resonate throughout the week in your heads. You are good people. You are kind people. You are generous people. You're soft-spoken people. You're hearty. You're kind. These words should resonate in your minds throughout the week until I see you again next Sunday. So that in those situations where those situations test you, because life is a bunch of tests, isn't it? Every moment is a test. And when you're about to face that test and something that you shouldn't be saying is about to come out of your mouth, you go, ah, Thank you. Swamin Mahansi is going to say good things about me next week, so I had better not spoil it. It's okay. That's all right. You know, the other day, one of my students came up to me and asked me, Swami Nan, sir, you're my teacher, and I take great pleasure in impressing you as a teacher. I take great pleasure in knowing that you are happy with the things I do. Is that all right? Is that wrong? They asked me. What do you think the answer was? I take great pleasure in doing all these good things that I do. I'm very kind. I try and be as helpful as I can and do as much service to the sasana as I can. But I do it because I know it makes you happy. I know it impresses you. Is that all right? What do you think? Huh? Don't you do that? When you were younger, didn't you do that? With your parents, with your teachers? So here's what I said. As long as you're doing it with the right teacher, it's okay for the time being. I caveat with the time being. As long as you're doing it with the right teacher, it's okay for the time being. Let me tell you, help you make sense of what I've just said there. It's okay as long as you're doing that with the right teacher. Because the right teacher will only ever encourage and be happy and be impressed if you do the right things. Yeah? So you can never impress the Buddha, for instance. You can never impress a Radha Mahanse by doing something bad, either to yourself or to others. You're never going to be in their good books by doing that. Provided you are doing it for the right reasons, a good teacher will only be happy if that condition is there. So in other words, you are doing it for the right reasons. But for the time being. Why that? Because you need to be someone who is unshaken by anything. So your teacher's praises, your teacher's felicitations, your teacher's good words and congratulations should not be part of the reason why you are happy. Because once again, you are conditionally happy. Even if you are happy because the Buddha praised you, that is still conditional happiness. But provided it's the Buddha, you're alright for the time being. But for the time being. So when you spend your day out and about, there will be instances where you will be tested. Here's how I think of this to myself, right? During my first years of training, I used to always think that it was my teacher who sent these people to test me. I used to think like that. It was a very good practice. So if someone was to come and say something to upset me, I'd immediately think to myself, I see what you're doing, sir. I used to think that my teacher was sending them to test me. And then when the alarm goes off, at the bad time, the alarm always goes off at a bad time, right? It never goes off at a good time. So when the alarm goes off, right, and you're sleeping and you want to get a few extra 5 minutes would be bliss. But the alarm won't have it. It goes off when it's supposed to go off and it goes tickety-tick, 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 right? Just remind yourself, that is Swami Mahansa doing that. So don't you look at the clock and go, this wretched clock. No, is Swami Mahansa doing that? He's testing you. Because here you are training and at home you are testing. That is the lab of life. Because how do you know how good you are if you don't get the tests from time to time? So don't wish for a life where everything is just tickety-boo. Don't wish for that. Everything is just going your way. Everything is just going very smoothly. Because you might be fooled. Don't wish for that. The ups and downs of life are always welcome. Embrace both equally. Because the objective of this game, ladies and gentlemen, is to be okay with anything. Not just the ups, not just with the downs. Even with the ups. If you find yourselves elated, like uncontrollably happy, bear in mind that after you climb to the pinnacle, there's only one way from there, and that is down. So catch yourself in those moments. Learn to be happy for others. Show them that. You know, when your kid does something good, right? When your wife does something good, when your husband does something good, he's performed well at work and he's got a promotion, he's got his increment, he's got, you know, he's moving up in the world. And the wife is the same, you know, they're going places, they're doing things, and she's been very successful at work. When she comes home and says, "Honey, guess what? I got that promotion I always wanted." Don't you go and say, "Anichai." Don't you, no. Oh no. Don't come back here on Sunday. You got to learn to be happy for others. Don't reserve yourself there. When someone walks up to you and they expect your goodwill, your good wishes, right? They expect you to be happy on their behalf. Show it unreservedly. Not sparingly. Just give it. Because that will make them happy and it will make them your friend. You're the right kind of people to be messing with, right? So if someone becomes your friend, where do you think that's going to end up for them? You know, I encourage you to win friends. Not to go drinking. That's not what I mean. I encourage you to make friends, noble friends. Become someone who is amiable. Of course, keep your boundaries. You know, that is common sense. Have your boundaries, you know, whatever. So don't go making friends with every person you meet on the street, because by the time you get home, there'll be a long queue. That's not what I mean. But become someone amiable so that people will walk up to you and ask you, "Where are you from? What do you do? How are you doing? You know, how do you spend your weekends?" Because then you'll have something to share with them. At the same time, you know, there will be some who are not interested in what you're doing. They'll be against what you're doing. Perhaps they might even pull you by the leg. Excuse me. Some might start pulling you by the leg, right? Some might start saying, "What is this nonsense you're doing? You used to be a happy-go-lucky guy. What are you doing now? Right? Sundays, you're wasting your life. You know, we used to go golfing. What are you doing now? You lost all your joy. I don't know. What are you like?" They start asking these things. If you can convince them with a few words and it's working, then fine. If not, walk away. Walk away. Because there are some associations in life, ladies and gentlemen, you are the product of the five people you spend most of your time with. Simple as that. Once again, you are the five people you spend most of your time with. Because you are heavily influenced all the time. Even right now you are being influenced, aren't you? Look at the things I'm telling you to do and the things I'm telling you not to do. You are being influenced right now. You are the product of the five people you spend most of your time with. So when you come here, I tell you things to do and things you not to do. You will take this with you. Some of you will take some of it. Some of you will take all of it. But I don't get to be one of the people who spends most of your time with you. I only get half a day of 7 days in the week. That's all I get. But there will be those who will come into your lives and, you know, they can either be a blessing to you or they can wreak havoc. Whatever situation you find yourselves in life, right, whether it is the miserable times or the good times, excuse me, the miserable stuff or the good stuff that happens in your lives, a lot of it is influenced, in fact, most of it, pretty much all of it is influenced by the people you spend your time with. So be very mindful about that. So in this new year, right, I want to give you a couple of goals. One is try and introduce two people to the path of Dhamma, just as someone did that for you. I mean, that would be a fantastic goal to have. Introduce two individuals to the path of Dhamma. And think about how you might work on that. Because it's not going to be an overnight, you know, walk up to a stranger and say, hey, Sunday, can you come with me? They'd be like, Not like that. You might have to come up with a plan for that. First, you might have to be nice to them. Maybe you'll have to return that book that you borrowed from them 3 years ago. And you forgot it. Maybe you might have to send them a birthday card. Oh, by the way, who's had their birthdays already? This year? Just one? Two? Okay, good. So start making plans on what you want to do for your birthday. How do you want to spend this birthday? Have you not been born again? Have you not been born again? Are you the same person you were last year? So how do you want to spend your birthday? Last year you were a different creature, a different animal altogether. Up until last year. So up until last year, you celebrated who you were for the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, whatnot. So you threw a party, invited your friends. Don't not do that. Please continue doing that. Right? You made a cake or you bought a cake. Right? You cut it and lit the candles and sang yourselves happy birthday to me. You did all that. You got presents. You gave presents, whatever. Right? And it was your day. But have you now not begun to understand that this concept of a birthday is nonsensical? What is a birthday? When are you born? Were you born on that day? 25 years ago? 30 years ago? 45 years ago? Was that your birthday? You're just mind and matter. So what is your real birthday? I'm ruining your birthday for you, aren't I? I know I'm not going to be on your invitee list. I'm not going to get a birthday card, am I? No, but here's what I want you to do. You know, when your birthday comes, celebrate your birthday as you do, because your friends, your family, they'll expect that from you. Right? And so please, don't cut any corners. Do what you have to do to please them. That you have to do. A good Buddhist is always aware of their surroundings. Even the Buddha said this. So when he laid down the rules of conduct, he always said, adhere to my rules and to the code that I lay down, but always pay attention and be aware and give priority to the environment that you're in and the rule of the land, the law of the land, wherever you're in. So to that, he always said, give priority. Because otherwise you can't survive. You know, it's no good going to another land and saying, you know, that's what the Buddha said, so that's what I'm doing. You can't do that. Now, for instance, that our monks at the monastery, we don't generally wear footwear. We don't need to. But when we travel, for instance, I'll be showing you some footage of our monks on their tour to Australia. So I've got that to show you today. When they traveled, and as they were boarding an aircraft, it is apparently mandatory if you have some distance to walk on the tarmac before you are on board a flight, you have to wear footwear. So they carried a pair of slippers with them. So at that point, do you think they're going to stand up and say, no, the Buddha said don't wear footwear? That would be silly, wouldn't it? You know, we're not here to make a fuss or to stand out of the crowd. That's not what it is. We're here to be okay with anything. Okay with anything. How did I get here? Where were we going with this? New Year. New Year. So in the... not New Year. Birthdays. Thank you. Thank you. So when you get to your birthdays this year, You can start thinking about what you want to do on your birthday. Come up with something. You know, it's a special day, of course, and you can plan on doing something that's going to be meaningful. Because what you did on your previous birthdays, I doubt they were very meaningful, because, you know, you cut a cake, invited your friends round, threw a party, ate something, danced, music, all that, and then that was the end of it. When the guests left, you were just left with the dishes to wash. Yeah, and the after party, the aftermath of the after party, that's what was left. But this year, do that, because that is what you have to do. You see how glad I am, I'm a monk. I don't have to throw a birthday party. So I don't have to cut cake. I don't have to celebrate. Nobody even asks me when your birthday is, because I don't have a birthday. I don't have one. There was a day on which I was ordained, yes. If you ask me what was my lay birthday, I still remember it. I haven't forgotten that. It's not like when you become a monk, you lose all your memory. It's not like that. But truly, I don't have a birthday. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I am born in this moment. So if you want to know when my birthday is, it's now. And now. And again. Here, it's my birthday. Come on, let's all sing, happy birthday. So it's not a happy birthday then, is it? How can it be a happy birthday? How long does it take for a chitta to arise and pass away? A day? No. A trillion trillion chittas arise and pass away in a matter of hours. In a matter of minutes. So there can't be a birthday. This is all made up stuff. It's all made up stuff. I know I'm ruining your birthdays for you, I'm sorry about that. But you know, you came here and you're still coming here. You want the truth. But conventionally, do what you have to do. Don't be a social piranha. Don't be there. Don't try to stand out of the crowd like a sore thumb. Right? Then people will start attacking you. This will happen if you do that. Say if it's, you know, a member of your family, and let's take the 4th of February for instance. If you have a birthday at home and your family expect you to be at home, if it's your anniversary, if it's your birthday, if it's someone else's birthday, your birthday, whatever, stay at home. Don't come for the meditation. I'll be thankful to you for doing that. Don't come for the meditation. Because unless the people that you spend most of your time with, they are also now convinced that this is what is best for everyone. If that is so, perfectly fine. Then bring them all. If you can. But if they want to be at home and have their mother at home because it's her birthday, or if Chudiputta wants his mother at home because it's his birthday, stay at home and be a good mother first. We can't break all social norms and customs and so on, you know, on our quest to Nibbana. That's not how it's going to work. Because Nibbana is being okay with anything. What if you miss the meditation program and now you're broken, you're falling apart into pieces? You're crying your eyes out. Are you okay? Have you become someone who's okay with anything? No. Now you're not okay with anything, are you? So that defeats the purpose of you coming to the meditation program in the first place. So Nibbana is being okay with anything. So let me share with you. What? It's 10:30. I was going to share with you how to be okay with anything. And now it's 10:30 already. Well, you opted. I don't know. I can go until 11:30. But you opted for 10:30, 10:45. Do you want me to take another round of votes? Or you still want to keep to that? Keep to that? Okay. Because if I take your arms and it's past, say, 12:30, there's in some places it's 12 o'clock, in other places it's 12:30, to do with the sun and all that, in the time of the President, Her Excellency Chandrika Bandaranaike Kumaratunga, when she was there, or was it Sirimava Bandaranaike? Chandrika Bandaranaike. And when she was President, they, I think, shifted time by half an hour. So then it went on from 12 to 12:30 and so on. Therefore, in some places they adhere strictly to the 12 o'clock, other places to 12:30. So, either way, if I take your arms and I either have to not consume it, if it's past the time, or I have to not take it in the first place because I don't want to take your offering and then go and dispose of it. That wouldn't be the right thing to do. But now that I started, I have to say it, otherwise it feels like I've not given you, I've shown you the problem, but I've not given you the answer. That's not right. How do you be okay with anything? The way to be okay with anything, ladies and gentlemen, is to understand that anything is everything. I wish you didn't say that, Swami, once, and now I'm totally confused. Anything is everything. Shall I show you everything in this universe? In one? Yeah. This is everything in the universe. In one. Because anything is everything. What do I mean by this? What you see here is just a configuration, a manifestation of matter and energy. This same matter, the same energy, if it were reconfigured, if it were rearranged in another way, it would be something else. Just like the food that you eat has gone into making different parts of your bodies, has gone into making the different bodies that you are. Right? This lady is different from this gentleman. But the same food was eaten. We've been through this several times before. So anything is everything. So once you understand that anything can be everything, now there is nothing to hold on to as one thing. There are no entities anymore, they're just manifestations. See, once you recognize this, ladies and gentlemen, this makes a crack in this defilement called moha. It is one of the roots of unwholesomeness, moha, which is delusion. Once you understand this, your moha or your delusion is cracked. And then you keep on contemplating on this. On a bed of moha, you have raga and dvesha. So if this is moha, on the bed of moha, you have raga or desire and dvesha or aversion. There's also another one. There is also moha, which I'll explain to you another day. So there's moha moha, raga moha, and dvesha moha. Or rather, you can say the other way around. Moha moha, moha raga, and moha dvesha. These are the roots of unwholesomeness that operate in your mind. So what the Dhamma does, it is helps crack this delusion. This is where the Dhamma attacks. It doesn't really attack raga and dvesha. It doesn't. So the Dhamma that you learn, the Dhamma that I preach you, does not really attack raga and dvesha. It attacks moha. Because moha is your delusion. As long as delusion prevails in the mind is delusional. So therefore the mind creates entities. What happens when you create entities is, now you have to have a way in which you interact with these entities. So now you have three ways in which you can interact with an entity. One, you can evaluate your entity. This is evaluation. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it favorable? Is it unfavorable? Is this my cup of tea or is it not? You're evaluating it. In that moment, you're vexing. You want to know what it is. You want to know how it's like. You want to know, is it good or bad? You're vexing. Then, if it's good, if it's the good stuff, you shift from moha to raga. Now you like it. So from there on, you start to build a relationship with that. I mean, these are all three of them are relationships, but now you have decided that it is favorable to you. Now you like to associate with it. That's where raga happens. Ask yourselves, when you feel this, the lust or desire within your heart, is it not towards something that is of your liking? It's always like that. But to decide, to determine whether it is an object of your liking, what did you do initially? You evaluated, didn't you? Is it what I like? Will my mother approve? What do I know about this person? What do I know about this object? What are my previous experiences with this object? What have I learned about this object or this person? Right? This is the period during which you go through an evaluation. But in that moment of evaluation, you're vexed. See, it's like me asking you, I've got something behind this fan. Would you like it? Would you like to have it? Now, some of you might probably know what I have in my hand, because I only had two objects in my hand previously. But let's just assume you didn't, and you had absolutely no idea what I had in my hand. Now, you have a vexation in your mind. You can sense it. It's almost, you can totally sense it. Because you're suspicious. Is it something good? Is it something bad? I don't want to say no to it in case it's favorable. I don't want to say yes to it in case it's something harmful. Right? So you're always, it's like a box. So, coming back to birthdays. You know why when your friends give you a present, they wrap it up? You think because they want to treat you special, right? They want you to feel special, so they wrap it up and they give you a present in a nice box wrapped up. Whether they know it or not, what they're really doing is they're putting you into a state of moha. Because when it's wrapped up as a gift, what are you thinking in your mind? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it favorable? Is it unfavorable? Am I going to like it? Will I want it? Or will I not want it? Is it the worst thing that I could imagine? All of these things, all of these thoughts are going through your mind. It is a moment of vexation. You are really vexing at that point. And you don't even know it. Your friends don't know it, but that's what you're going through. Just imagine if they gave you a gift, but not wrapped up. Normally you don't do that. But if they did, it takes away the suspense, doesn't it? It takes away the suspense. And once the suspense is lost, that relief from vexation is also lost. See, isn't this what you expect from a gift giving? From here to here. Do you all agree with that? This is the shift that you are expecting to make from here to here. You don't want to go directly here, you want to go from here to here. First you want to not know what it is. Then you want to know, get to know what it is. All agreed with that? Isn't that why you like a wrapped up present? Otherwise why can't they just come and give it to you? Here you go. I thought I should get you a pen. There you go. Even a pen, when wrapped up, that suspense is nail biting. It's enchanting. It's thrilling, just the thrill of it. You love it, don't you? You know what I'm talking about. That's why you wrap them up to give to your friends as well. So when you wrap up a gift next time for someone, just know that you are doing the worst thing you can to your friend. And do it anyway. Why? Because that is what they expect from you. Don't disappoint them. If you just go and give them, even if it's the best thing in the world, if you give it to them, just like that without a wrapping paper around it, they're not going to be very impressed, because what they wish to do is go from vexation to relief from vexation and therefore pleasure. That is what they expect to happen. It's like that roller coaster ride. We talked about this right at the beginning. How can going on the roller coaster be fun? Because when you're up there and you look down and you ask yourself why you got on that in the first place, and then you start counting your lucky stars and hope that your merits will come to save you at that point, And then you all, you know, you've never been to the mosque before, never been to the church before, never been to the temple before, but you start Itipiso, Bhagava, Arahan, Samma, Sambuddho. Huh? Never been to the mosque before, but that's the first time you go like this. First time. Never done that before. Oh God, I trust you. No one else is going to help me now. Please save me. But then the roller coaster declines and comes back to its starting point. Once it comes to a stop, now you are happy because you have been relieved of that vexation. Here's what. See, in that moment, here's what's happening. First you go into moha, and then you go into dvesha. You don't even know this. When you are up there on the roller coaster, ladies and gentlemen, you are not having fun. You are not. Your mind is in an intense state of aversion because fear is a manifestation of aversion. It's not a manifestation of desire. It's not a pleasant feeling. But then, once the vehicle returns to the ground, now you go from dvesha to raga. See, you're constantly jumping between these three states. An untamed mind that is laden with ignorance and attachment is always in one of these three states, either in moha or in raga or in dvesha. All the while you are acquiring karma. Karma is constantly being done and to bring you fruition as vipaka at a later point. If at the point of any of these, now with dvesha you can't do merits. You can't do merits with dvesha. You can do merits with moha and raga. Demerit is generally done with dvesha and moha. But when your mind is in one of these three states, you are constantly doing either punya karma or papa karma. One of these two. That's why, you know, you can hardly catch a thought in a non-arahant mind that is not acquiring more karma. Therefore, every thought that you have, you're creating the fuel that you need to keep going in samsara. You know, you can't force yourself to stop doing karma. It doesn't work like that. Because karma is not something that you do. Karma is something that is done. Cause and effect. For as long as the causes prevail, there is nothing that you can do to stop karma. Karma happens. You don't do karma. Nobody does karma. Nobody does karma. That's why they say karma is a female dog. Nobody does karma. Karma just happens. And then when vipaka happens. Nobody draws upon the vipaka. It just happens. There's no doer here, just the done. This is why we have to deal with the causes that lead to you doing karma. That lead to the karma being done. Eradicate those causes and karma will no longer be done. That's it. Karma is a state of mind where the mind goes into a state of suffering. In each of these three states, the mind is in suffering. You think, how can the mind be suffering in raga? It is. It is. It is in a state of suffering. Because it is rooted in moha. The point at which it was at moha was a point where the mind created an entity which didn't exist until then. All there are manifestations, but the mind creates an entity because the mind has gone into a state of vexation. The mind's gone insane at this point. Like I said, you know, this is everything in one. The whole universe is here. But you don't see it that way because you see a fan. You see a fan because you fix this manifestation as an entity. This is the mind perceiving entities because the mind is untamed and the mind seeks pleasure, the mind seeks happiness in perceiving entities. Over the top? I think a little bit. But that's okay. Because one day I'll give you a few extra sums and then you'll be like, how do I do them? And next week I'll go through them. That's the way it works. Now last week you understood everything I said. So this week it's not fair if you understand everything I say, right? That's not fair. Because then you'll wonder, Swami, don't you practice the Dhamma at the monastery? And because every week you tell us something and we understand all of it. Like, so we don't even practice, we are at home as lay people and we come to the sermon, you say what you have to say and we understand every word of it. So then surely we don't need to ordain, do we? We don't need to become monks because we understand everything that you say. So, I have to tease you. It's not the same. So there are some weeks in which I will share with you some things which will not make sense to you immediately, but that's okay because the following week we'll go over it again. But there will be a handful of people here who will have understood exactly what I meant. But that's always the case. In any class it's going to be that. Some will understand it fully, some will understand it partly, some will not understand it at all, but that's okay. As long as you keep doing it, it will become evident to you at some point. But try and walk away today with this, what I've just put on the board here. For as long as your mind is not an arahant, you are always in one of these three states, either in moha, in raga, or in dvesha. When the mind defiles itself further to do unmeritorious deeds, this raga shifts from being raga to lobha. You've heard of lobha dosa moha? Yeah? You've heard of lobha dosa moha, and then you've heard of raga dvesha moha. When you're doing something good, when you're still attached to the world, that is at a state of raga. But when you're doing something bad, when you're doing something unwholesome, then it doesn't stop at raga. It shifts up to lobha. And lobha is a state where you cling on to the world. By world, I don't mean the physical world. I mean to the sights, the sounds, the smells, the taste and the touch, experiences, everything. You cling on to that, and that becomes, you know, you become the center stage of that. That is what happens. Whereas with raga, all you need is to associate with it. That is what raga means, to associate with. And to enjoy. That's what raga means. But lobha is something far more harmful than that. So we'll discuss more about that next week. I'm conscious of time. But before we conclude, I want to show you a little video clip. So last week I showed you some footage of some of the work that we've done at the monastery over the last year, and I wanted you all to take a moment to enjoy and rejoice in all that, right? But one thing I couldn't show you last week was because the two monks who were on the tour spreading the gift of Dhamma to the Australians were still in Australia. So they arrived last week and they have brought with them a short video clip of the good work that they've been doing in Australia. Now, the reason I'm showing this to you, ladies and gentlemen, is for a couple of reasons. One, although we are here and there over there, once again, you have all played a part in that. And I think I explained to you how you all play a part in everything we do in the service of the sasana. You have made this possible. Secondly, I think that this is a good example. This is why we are learning the languages. So right now at the monastery we are learning several languages. I'm learning Spanish. There are Swami Mahasis who are learning German. There are others learning Korean. There are others learning Hindi and Telugu, a couple of other languages, and Japanese. So we are learning a number of different languages. Several of our Swami Mahasis and even Anagarika Mahatmyas, they are learning Mandarin. China is a vast country. And if you can take the gift of Dhamma there, I mean, you know what difference the Dhamma has made to you, right? So should it not do the same to them as well? Are they not entitled to that? The Australian community, our devotees there, people who've been listening to the Dhamma for many years actually. In fact, on our trip to Sri Lanka, when we were still lay people, we stopped over in Australia. So that community has grown, and today, in Australia, we have the largest community of people who listen to these talks, but we also have other large populations in other countries as well. So, you know, one day, they don't have the luxury that you have, unfortunately. You get to come and meet us face to face, you get to come and get our blessings, but this is the best that they can do. But there are those people who live in those countries who are, you know, our diaspora, they live there, but they want to take the message of the Dhamma to natives in that land, to the Australian people, natively Australian people. Now just imagine if this can happen in other countries as well one day. We are learning the languages and preparing ourselves for when the demand is there. For when the need arises, we want to be able to step forward and say, we bring the Buddha's message to you. Because this is the only truth that we believe can heal an ailing heart. So I want you to watch this and enjoy the good work that the Buddha Sasana is benefiting from. and how you have all been a part of all this, and I want you to rejoice in that. Let's watch the video, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have begun to teach the Australians how to free themselves from drugs. Eventually, they'll begin to learn how to free themselves from their TVs, from their mobile phones, from their computers. They'll become independent. We are taking independence to Australia. No one's free, ladies and gentlemen. No one is free. We can climb over the rooftops and shout from the rooftops saying that we are all independent, we are free. I mean, for how many years have we been independent on this 4th of February? There'll be the gun salutes, won't there? We'll be marking, commemorating independence, 1948. Since then. How many years? But who's really independent? The day you are okay with anything, that's your day of independence. The day you learn to be okay with anything and then from there on you start practicing, now you see the light at the end of the tunnel. That is what we want to give to the Australians. That is what we want to give not just to the Australians, but to every human being in this world. You are so fortunate that you have been engaged with this program from the very beginning. You get this every week. But now, our Swaminarayans are back here. They don't have anyone doing those programs over there. But another tour will be arranged in due course. They have requested our Anagarika Mahatmyas also to travel because there are those who have come to Sri Lanka, plenty of them, and they've spent time at the monastery. That's what I'm saying. If you come there, you spend some time and you experience what is there, then you realize that is the only path to salvation. Don't you think that they do programs at the rehabilitation centers every day, every week? Like, you know, they must be spending many thousands of dollars investing in the best technologies, investing in the best knowledge, investing in the best consultants. So when all of that is done, why do they still invite Swaminarayans who come there at no fee, at no cost? You know, if they have all that it takes, these are developed countries, first world countries, and we are still developing nations. If they have all it takes, if technology is the bee's knees, if advances in science and knowledge is all it is, then how come when our Swaminarayans go there, they welcome them with open arms? This is not the first time they visited there. They've gone back on invitation because they experienced what it was like last time. That's what I'm saying. So we are taking the Buddha's message far and wide to help people to learn to live like I do today. That's why I said right at the beginning, I'm not how I used to be like this, always. I couldn't imagine a world without a TV. I couldn't imagine that. I needed my TV, I needed my music, I needed my food, I needed a woman by my side. Today, I'm free. I don't need any of that. Because a chitta doesn't need any of that. A chitta is a chitta. You don't need anything to surround it for support. A chitta is a chitta. But if there are chittas around here in this room that still feel that it needs a TV, it needs the music, it needs drama, it needs entertainment, it needs to go on trips, it needs a woman, needs a man, needs the children, needs a house, needs wealth, needs property, needs all these things, that is because you have still not accepted that you are just a chitta. You still think you are a man. You think you are a woman. That's why. These are all big fragments of your own imagination. You think they are. It's not true. Once you realize the Dhamma, all will come true to you. So I hope you all rejoice in that, the service that is being done in the mission. This is the mission of the Sasana. And I want to remind you again, you have all been part of all that. And please rejoice wholeheartedly so that you can become part and earn enough merits to help you on your path to Nibbana, by witnessing and rejoicing in all the goodness that is taking place around the world and many people benefiting from the Buddha's message. That is all we are here to do. Just give the Buddha's message. Take the Buddha's message and give nothing to me in return, that's fine. Because you have already given me everything I have come here for. You taking the Buddha's message is what I want. That's it. Right. Let's do the merit transfer and bring today's sermon to a close. Let us transfer all the message that we have acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swaminarayanas to deliver the sermons and listening to the sermon, as well as creating a conducive environment so that not only you but others can also benefit from these sermons. Let us transfer this message to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down to the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us also transfer these merits to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us transfer this message to my teacher, Guru Swami Mahanse, as well as all the monks and anagarikas and anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha far and wide, as well as those who make great efforts to transliterate these talks and share them out with others, as well as inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer this message to the friends of the monastery, our devotees, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide for the construction of the monastery to those who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who extend their well wishes and continue to share their know-how. May they all rejoice in these merits. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends and our acquaintances, our teachers, our employers and our employees, and all our friends and everyone who's made great efforts on our behalf, who've gone the extra mile and done everything in their power to help make our lives as comfortable as it could be. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they also be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the Nimas gods and deities who have committed themselves to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us transfer this message to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our loved ones who have passed away in our name, our forefathers and our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts that we do and practice the path in peace and harmony. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives in wars, be they friend or foe, as well as those who have lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, blizzards, storms, as well as the pandemics, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends and acquaintances to us. They'll have done everything in their power to help make our lives as comfortable as they could, reminding ourselves of this, and with an abundance of gratitude and gratefulness in our hearts, let us transfer all the merits we have acquired out of boundless compassion and loving kindness to all of them. May they all rejoice in these merits, and if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer this, I beg your pardon, let us remind ourselves that by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a Rahatan Mahanse or an Arahat Thiranin Mahanse in this life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Right. අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්ත්වයන් නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.